I didn't know he had that protocol. So I'm happy to, did I institute it?
Yeah, good. Brilliant. All right.
Brilliant. Let's take a, unless there's objection from council, we'll take a short break of.
Oh, Eric, hubby, you're a volunteer. Yes. I don't want, is there any, I don't want to hold you up unduly. Is there any questions?
You can delay.
Excuse me. If you have any questions of Eric, he's a volunteer. I'd like.
No, I asked my question of Eric. Thank you. Okay. And I do recognize there's a lot of folks here who are waiting to testify on both this and other issues.
Thank you, Eric, for your service. I greatly appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. So, and the CenturyLink folks have graciously agreed to set back the meeting 15 minutes. But my question for Ken, one of them, is according to the ordinance, we're going to borrow $4.4 million, and then $1.5 million is going to be paid in some other way. How are we going to pay the $1.5 million?
Well, I'm assuming that BDS will be paying for that out of their own resource that they have right now, but Denise probably is better able to answer that question, Commissioner.
There's some costs that can be capitalized and some costs that cannot be. So the $4.4 million are costs that are eligible to be capitalized and can be covered by the line of credit. And the balance, the 1.4, is not. So the 1.4 is actually put into the financial plans that's in your packet, showing that we would pay that out of pocket as the costs are incurred.
Okay. And if before we vote on this next week, if I could get your updated.
It's an emergency ordinance.
I thought you.
Oh, did we pull the emergency?
Yes,
okay.
We did.
All right.
If I could get your updated income and expenditures, because we had a report on that earlier this year, and we still weren't covering our cost of service. My question, though, is if we've got $1.5 million, why are we not? I've heard from citizens in the community that we're currently not serving everybody who comes into the permit center, that that people are turned away because we don't have enough planners and technicians, and they have to come back on subsequent occasions. Mm-hmm. So why are we not staffing up if we have the additional revenue so that we then get more revenue and we kickstart the construction rather than putting it into this technology, which will certainly help down the line but doesn't help us right now?
So the project costs that we gave you are for the whole project. They're costs over a four-year period. So the 1.4 of that, there's $1 million that is records conversion that's over a four-year period of time. And we can only actually do this because we would be then not spending the $200,000, $250,000 to microfilm records. We would stop doing the microfilming, and then we would shift those expenses over towards doing our records conversion.
And that's where the $1.5 million
comes
from? That's
part of it comes from that, and then part of it comes from out-of-pocket costs.
So that's my question is, why aren't we hiring more staff back now? Because we've got folks coming into the permit center who aren't getting served.
But the answer was, you asked, why don't we use the $1.4 million? There isn't $1.4 million available. And the future budgets have yet to be allocated yet, so we don't have that money laying around to hire people. Those are based on the outgoing
future
years over the next 5 years.
So I'd like to see your detailed monthly financials.
But I want to be real. I want people listening to be misled by what was asked. There isn't $1.4 or $1.5 million laying around somewhere.
And that's I didn't suggest that there was, so I'm glad you clarified that. So there is, however, in Exhibit D that we're going to staff 7 new positions in BDS for $1.5 million. And they're limited term positions. That works out to $220,000 per year per employee. How long are those? Is that accurate? Are we hiring highly paid folks in these positions?
That includes all costs. So it includes, all the roll up costs associated with them. So materials and telephone, et cetera.
But $220,000
is a lot. They are building. They are analysts that look at our programs. They are a senior planner that would look at internal operations, an applications analyst, a programmer. So they are not real lower level positions. They're not management positions, but they're highly professional positions.
Let's be clear again, because this stuff gets out on the record. And nobody gets $220,000 a year, including benefits. That would be a misrepresentation of the numbers. They include a number of costs for materials and services and others, and to dispel any notion that that's the case, please put together the actual cost per position.
Yeah, that's what I was going to suggest. Yeah.
Thank you, and that was we'll what I was going to ask.
That is over, the 1.5 is over a two-year period of time. It's a two-year cost.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't 2 years. Mention that.
So it's $110,000.
Yeah, that wasn't
yes,
in the report.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't catch that. Yeah.
Let's get this clear. It's 110,000, and that includes materials and services.
Exactly.
Which is much more reasonable.
Rent. Yeah.
And the other line item where it listed what staff were going to be, it said that there were four of them for 3 years, and so that those numbers made sense. But so thank you for the clarification. So the city treasurer report states that repayment of the debt obligation is fully dependent on a significant economic recovery over the next 2 years. It goes on to say that he expresses no opinion as to whether the project should proceed at a time when the presumed economic recovery is not yet evident. And the project involves risks that in the absence of moderate to strong economic recovery will impose potential significant financial burdens on the Bureau, may ultimately force the general fund to assume responsibility for this debt. Why should we set aside the concerns expressed in this memo? And I'm asking you, Ken, as the director.
Well, I think, Commissioner, that you shouldn't set those aside. I think that the Treasurer is trying to make sure that you understand that this is a risk and that we need to be prepared to manage that risk. And that clearly there are some things on the horizon that, you know, we're making assumptions about, but will only be, you know, realized over a period of time. And like any kind of a projection, things can go wrong. So with that as a backdrop, I think the concern is that making sure that if things don't proceed as planned and we have to make adjustments, that you're not surprised by that necessarily. So to give you a full heads up that, you know, this does have some challenges for us. It's not as perhaps risk-free, as you will, if that's the right way to describe it, as some of the other transactions that we do where we have more control over our resources or we have less reliance on a forecast that has, you know, some uncertainties built into it.
But can I, again, I think the question is a good one and a useful one, but the risk, since we're loaning the money to ourselves, is that instead of paying it back in 5 years, we're paying it back in 6 years. And I'm going to obviously push to make sure that it's paid back in five, but the risk here isn't that we're in default, or this is a loan that we're making to ourselves to equip up a bureau that is in ancient times for systems.
Mayor, I would certainly, there's not a risk of default. That's not the issue. The question is, if the plan as projected isn't realized, what might happen? And what might happen is that there are a lot of things that we could choose to do. We may choose, if necessary and had to, I'm not saying that we ever would, that the general fund ultimately would have to step in because the general fund is backing the line of credit. But clearly, there's a lot of things that we can do and we would do to avoid that, and we'd be working with BDS, we'd be working with you to make sure that we could manage that. It's like any other borrowing that we undertake. We don't just borrow the money and then forget about it. We manage that. We've successfully managed hundreds of millions of dollars of short-term borrowing. We have $3.5 billion of long-term debt outstanding. This is not the first time we've undertaken something that involves some risk. I think the risks are manageable.
So are we borrowing it from an outside entity?
Yes.
Okay.
So we would enter into a transaction with a commercial bank, and we would then repay them over time. That's what we do. Virtually all of our lines of credit are with external banks.
Thank you.
So I stand corrected there. When this bureau had previous technology, has it always paid for its own technology, or has the general fund paid? And do all bureaus normally sort of take it out of hide, or does the general fund pay on occasion for some of our enterprise bureaus?
I'll speak for Paul. I don't believe that the general fund has ever paid for technology-related improvements and projects inside of BDS. It's designed to be a special revenue fund that operates within its own resources. I'm not aware also that the enterprise funds of the city have ever relied on the general fund to pay for its technology improvements.
So we did make a contribution in a previous budget when I was a city commissioner to expand the existing system to the other regulatory bureaus. I remember that.
We go to the track system.
Yep.
Mayor.
Yeah.
So I would want to point out, with all due respect to Eric Johansson, he does great work. I've depended on him a lot, but he was not part of the committee, and he was not part of the staff that supported the committee. And maybe it's better if he came up and said, explained why he used the term that the repayment is fully dependent on significant economic recovery, because that's not what the committee found, that we are required to have a significant economic recovery to repay the debt. In fact, determined that in the worst case scenario, that if everything goes against us, we can still repay the debt.
So after our break, we'll have Eric come up if you want and answer that question. Commissioner Fritz needs a break for we are going to be braked for 15 minutes. From recess, Mr. Johansson.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners. I think the question came up about the substance of the memo that I prepared on this particular project. Just kind of to cut to the bottom line on it, I would just reiterate what Ken said previously, is if the revenue forecast isn't realized, even the worst case revenue forecast isn't realized, then we will be in some sort of a workout situation where either we refinance the debt or potentially the general fund would have to step in and take responsibility for it. The things that are present here that maybe are a little bit different than some financings is one, this is a passive revenue stream. We don't have a lot of ability to control it. So that's a little different than some of the financings. The second thing I'd point out is that the worst case scenario is still a growth scenario in the out years. And so that's why I said in the memo that this is still dependent upon some kind of a recovery over that next 5-year period, because again, the worst case still says in the out years that we have growth. So that was the reason for that language in the memo. But the bottom line here again is that if we get out there, and if hopefully we could see it coming, and if the revenue forecasts aren't being realized, then we'll have to look at doing some sort of a restructuring. And we thought it was appropriate for council to know that's a potential that exists out there.
And why would we go to an outside product? Why don't we MasterCard it?
Internally?
Yeah.
Right now, the first of all, the rates from the banks are very, very attractive in the 1% to 2% range right now at the lower end of that.
Right.
We found it has been difficult at times to find a bureau that is able to lend for a 5-year period. We've done interfund borrowing typically for shorter term borrowings. When we get into that 5-year period, then it becomes a little harder to find a source of funding within the city to fund an interfund loan.
Did you have more, Commissioner Fritz?
Thank you.
All right. Did you have more to testify, Commissioner?
Apparently,
Paul.
We have the state
yes.
who is going to testify about the system we're going to.
Oh.
I'd also like to have Hank McDonald and Mark Grinke come up.
Thank you all very much for staying all morning and then for taking that recess. I greatly appreciate it.
Mark, you can use one.
You want to go first?
Yeah, please. Right,
thanks very much. My name is Patrick Allen. I'm the administrator of the State Building Codes Division. We operate the state e-permitting system. Question came up earlier about where we are on that system. Let me just quickly to help draw a good picture, talk about why we're doing a statewide e-permitting system, what we've been tasked with by the legislature to go do. Right now, we talk about building permits. That's actually a little bit of a misnomer. When you go do a project, build a house, build a building, you get a basket of permits. You get a structural permit, a plumbing permit, an electrical permit. And in many parts of the state, those permits are issued by different cities or counties. So at a given house, the electrical permit perhaps is issued by the county, while the plumbing permit is issued by the city. that you're in. Now, take that fairly complicated scenario and put it somewhere like McLaughlin Boulevard. Where you are on McLaughlin Boulevard means you may be in the city of Portland, you may be in the city of Milwaukee, you may be in Clackamas County, you may be in Multnomah County. And the answer to that question may depend on what side of the street you're on, where in the block you are, and all of a sudden the dynamic of who's issuing what permit can shift. And there's, you know, obviously not bright lines in the street that necessarily tell you who issues what for what jurisdiction. Now take that across the entire metropolitan area to someone who's doing projects in multiple jurisdictions. And what you have is a circumstance where today a builder needs to carry physical paperwork to City Hall, to County Courthouse, all across the metropolitan region through 26 cities and 3 counties and various other jurisdictions. And it's a very labor-intensive, paper-intensive, time-intensive process. Big construction companies have permit expediters. That's a person who doesn't do anything to help build stuff. They just carry paper around. Mom-and-pop construction companies, it's mom or pop who's not running the business but complying with those important public safety regulations. The state e-permitting system, were tasked by the legislature in 2007 to go create a single online portal where, irrespective of the jurisdiction issuing the permits, ultimately builders can go to that portal, put in the address, and not have to think about which city is issuing which permit or which county is doing the inspections. They're able to pay their fees, submit their plans, check the status of their applications, and all those sorts of things. It's a 10-year, $50 million project that ultimately is aimed at getting the large majority of the state's 134 cities and counties online on that system. We started with a pilot project that was limited to 7 jurisdictions with a very simple online portal in 2005. Over the course of 2007 and 2008, we expanded that online portal to cover 33 cities and counties, including Portland. We moved those to the Accela product, which we contracted and negotiated for during 2008. We moved them onto that Accela portal in 2009. We've moved our first full-service jurisdiction onto the system in July. That was Springfield. And right now we have about 16 jurisdictions that are in the queue, cities and counties that are in the queue to come onto the full-service system. I think rather than talk about any other overview, I'd answer any of the questions you might have about the state system.
It's not required for jurisdictions to hook into it. And I think Tigard is in your line. Are there?
Tigard is using the same software. They acquired their system at about the same time that we were negotiating our contract and going through the RFP process with Accela. They were far enough down the road, they chose not to stop their project and wait to see where ours came out. So the jurisdictions that are coming on the system right now are centered in Lane County. Lane County, City of Springfield, City of Eugene are the ones that we're bringing up immediately.
And do we know if Gresham and other local metro area ones are planning to hook into your system, or if specifically any are not?
Yeah, sure. Right now, that group of 16 jurisdictions that I mentioned coming on includes West Lynn, Lake Oswego, Milwaukee, and Troutdale. The City of Gresham has had conversations with us, and I think are strongly considering coming onto the system. Hillsborough is probably a little bit more on the fence. I think they're very interested in the Accela product, and they're having their own internal conversations about whether doing that product as a part of our system or on their own hook makes the most sense.
Thank you.
Are there questions for this panel? Thank you. Did you have more?
No, go ahead.
Is there anyone that wishes to testify on this matter, Carlin? Did you have more?
Mayor, I'm just wanted to speak on behalf of the technology. I'm not here to talk about the financing and such, but we've been with BDS at the table from the very beginning, and I'm just giving my total vote of confidence that this is a rock-solid solution. It works for the state. It's going to work for the city, and we're really ready to partner with BDS and the rest of the city to automate a lot of our technology processes here. Thank you,
Mark. I don't know who to ask this question to, but we were supposed to get the figures for the other bureaus as far as how much their cost would be. Are we going to get that?
Exhibit C.
Thank you very much.
All right. Unless someone wishes to testify or there's additional discussion prompted by the City Council.
I have a question, Mayor.
Yep.
Commissioner Leonard, we're going to this is now non-emergency.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a couple of questions, but if we have the week, I'll just send them to you by email, given the time.
Okay.
Or look forward to them.
All right. So 1443 moves to a second reading.
Move those amendments still.
We have amendments?
Right, to make it a non-emergency, and it's in the memo dated.
Unless there are objections, the emergency clause is removed.
And there's some language to the title that has to change.
So moved.
And there's directives A, B, and C. There's some changes to those.
Okay.
Move the package, Mayor.
Second.
Moved and seconded the package as described by Carla so efficiently. Would you please call the vote on the amendments?
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. All right, moves to a second reading. Carla, can you please read 1436? And because it was a previous agenda, does that mean it's a second reading, or is this?
It can be a second reading.
Mm-hmm. Okay, then please read the title and call the vote for 1436.
No, I want some discussion on this. It was pulled from the consent agenda, but it was pulled to the regular agenda this week.
To be done this week?
Yeah.
Okay.
1436.
Specifically so we could have the discussion and presentation.
Okay.
1436, update the residential franchise customer cap to reflect 40% of the customer base.
Commissioner Amanda Fritz.
Thank you. I asked for this to be pulled because there are policy changes which are occurring regarding large consolidated haulers, and I wanted to get some more information from staff about the policy choice, because when it comes back to us, it will just be approving the franchises. So if you could tell us why this is better for the city, what the public process has been to make this change, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor Adams. Commissioners, I'm Bruce Walker. I'm the Solid Waste and Recycling Program Manager and work in the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. Some quick background. This provision was included, the 50,000 customer cap for any single franchisee was included in the initial franchise agreement that was adopted when this process was approved by City Council in 1991. It went into effect in 92. So this has been in place since the beginning of our residential franchise system in Portland. At that time, the customer base was the total number of residential customers, households served by the residential system, was 125,000 customers. We, as city staff, and yes, I was part of the team that helped develop that franchise, and worked with Sue Keel, now Bureau of Transportation, who headed up our efforts at that time. And we put in place a 50,000 customer cap, 40% of the customers at that time. We thought it was just I'll just say a reasonable provision to so that any one company doesn't get too big or dominate the market. And at that time, there was no company near that size.
How many companies did we have at that time?
At that time, there were our initial franchise agreement was there were 69 franchisees.
And how many do we have now?
There are now 21.
So under this proposed change, we could have three companies, two at 40% and one at 20%.
Yes, there would be, that would be one potential of that. So if I could just say, why are we looking at changing that? Is that, in my opinion, we're not looking at changing the overall strategy. In 1991, it was 50,000 customers out of 125,000. Due to growth of the system, a slight expansion of where our franchise system covers in the urban growth boundary or urban services boundary, as well as more customers have signed up, more infill housing that has occurred over time, there are now approximately 145,000 customers. So rather than getting a substantial policy discussion or revisitation of what council set in the early 90s, we believed it was a reasonable approach to bring forward maintaining that initial 40%, and rather than lock in on a firm number, such as the 50,000, we just said, let's not dramatically change the situation, but instead, just maintain the 40%.
By going to a percentage basis rather than a hard cap, I'm just trying to understand, that would be the equivalent of having indexed this for population growth from the beginning, correct?
That is correct.
So by moving away from the hard number, which was intended to be roughly 40%, and go to 40%, it in effect allows it to grow with population growth. It's still as then as now, you could potentially have as few as three haulers.
That is correct.
Okay. Other discussion?
Why would we want to encourage companies to consolidate and become bigger and bigger, especially ones that are not local, rather than supporting small local businesses?
There are two sides to every coin. And by that, I'm not trying to just use a phrase like that, but certain haulers all haulers need to make investments for the future, and some are making a choice to say, I'm no longer going to do those changes, and I'd like to have an opportunity to have a range of haulers that I can sell to. There is one proposed or potential sale that's being considered now by two haulers, and the smaller hauler would prefer to be able to have a range of existing franchisees to sell to rather than limited.
There's also a balance always between economies of scale and economies of local and smaller. So we're always trying to balance. To Commissioner Fish's point, the initial language, with all due respect, really should have contemplated, as we do in other policies, a percentage basis, not a fixed number. And this simply trues that up.
I would have much preferred that, in retrospect, that would have been a much better way to write it.
And to the question of whether we're encouraging or discouraging any activity, we're going from a cap of 50 residential customers. If my math is correct, with the current number of customers in the city, you could have up to 56,000 or somewhere in that range.
But generally, it would be about that. Correct.
It's not a whole cloth deterioration.
It's not a significant increase, but if there were to be any changes in ownership, those would be subject to arm's length transaction between private parties that the city either encourages or discourages within that cap.
Commissioner Fish, we do not encourage or yeah. So there's
we know. Yeah. I got to move us along, Bruce.
Yes.
Just one final question is whether the Planning and Sustainability Commission has considered this, or the PURB, or the Portland Utility Review Board?
We have not brought it in front of those bodies. The Planning and Sustainability Commission typically doesn't deal with these level of issues. Portland Utilities Review Board, we've not brought it up. It didn't appear to be a rate-related issue.
I just know from my email correspondence that obviously residential folks, garbage. Everybody gets garbage service pretty much, and recycling and all recycling. So it is something that people care about. Was there any kind of public notice of this or public outreach?
In short, there was not extensive. It was discussed internally. We discussed with the hauler community, and we felt that bringing it to council was continuation of the practice.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate us having a hearing on this. I don't know if there's anybody here to testify, but
just I have one other question, because the question of rate came up, and I think there's the potential for confusion, because I was confused when this first came to me. So whether there's 69 haulers or 21 or 19, the number of haulers doesn't determine what the rate is. The rate is set and is regulated by the city. So we're talking about just the number of haulers.
That is correct.
Any additional discussion on 1436? Is anyone here to testify on 1436? This moves to this. We had a first reading on this?
No. We read the title last week, so we could vote on it this week.
Okay.
Is there any urgency to do that? I mean, the purpose of having the hearing was to bring it to people's attention to see if anybody had any comments. So if there's no objection, I'd really prefer to vote on it next week.
I point out, if we move to next week, we don't have comments. You just vote. Today's the day to comment.
Right. And I actually know that there was somebody here, but the council session.
We'll move it to next week for a second reading and vote. Can you please read the title and call the vote for 1437?
Amend and extend an intergovernmental agreement with the Port of Portland for planning services to prepare a West Hayden Island plan and possible annexation proposal and provide for payment. Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Again, thank you, Mayor Adams, for your leadership on this, and also Bureau of Planning and Office of Healthy Working River staff. Also, Susie Ellison of the Port. Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 1437 is approved. Can you please read the title for first reading, non-emergency ordinance 1438?
Authorize interim financing for local improvement projects.
For the record, Eric Johansson, City Treasurer. This ordinance authorizes a revolving line of credit in the amount of not to exceed $20 million to provide interim financing for local improvement district projects located throughout the city. This request will authorize a new line to replace an existing line of credit that expires on January 15, 2011. Approval of the ordinance will ensure continued funding for local improvement district projects throughout the city. Amounts borrowed under the line of credit will be repaid from assessment payments and from the proceeds of long-term bonds. We'll be selecting a commercial bank to provide the line of credit through a request for proposals process.
Discussion from council.
I have a clarifying question. How does this relate to the Bancroft fund, which has $60 million in it?
It is related, but the practice that we have used historically is to provide the financing for the projects themselves through a line of credit to be repaid at a later date. One of the potential uses for the LID fund, the reserve component, could be to do this kind of a interim borrowing in the future, but we're not quite certain of the legal ramifications of doing that, but it is something that we're considering.
And what kind of interest rate are we getting on our $16 million versus what we would be paying on the line of credit?
Well, this one, you know, typically when we borrow internally, we're passing through the city's investment portfolio rate, which is around right now about 0.5%. The bank facility is probably going to cost us, again, this is like the other lines we've talked about today, somewhere between 1% and 2% based on current market rates.
Additional discussion from council. Anyone wish to testify on 1438? Move to a second reading next week. We're going to knock out 41 and 42 because I have an additional company to meet with to try to get some business for Portland. So can you please read the title?
Mayor, I also have we have an emergency.
We do?
1443 was pulled for an amendment, and it is an emergency. We can take care of that.
1443 was not an emergency. We took it off.
Oh,
no.
Which one?
1433, we haven't taken
33.
Off.
Oh, 33. Oh, I think you said 40. 33.
From the consent.
All right. Well, let's call the vote on the 1441.
1441, authorized revenue bonds for urban renewal areas. Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
I'm out.
1441. We're doing 1441.
We're doing four.
It's a second reading. Yep.
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 1441 is approved. Can you please read the title? Call the vote. Second reading, 1442.
Authorize a one-time exception to Human Resources Administrative Rule 6.03 to allow carryover of vacation leave in excess of the two-year maximum accrual. Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. So approved. Please read the title for emergency ordinance item number 1433.
Mayor, I have an amendment.
Authorize application to the Department of Housing and Urban Development for a grant in the amount of $1 million to identify and correct housing-related health and safety hazards in low-income housing.
Your amendment.
Thank you, Mayor. We've circulated two non-substantive changes, which every member of council has received. I move the two amendments.
Second. It's been moved and seconded. Can you please call the vote on the amendments to 1433?
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Additional discussion on the amended 1433? Carl, is there anyone that wishes to testify on 1433? This is an emergency ordinance. Carla, can you please call the vote on 1433?
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 1433 is approved. Can you please read the title for non-emergency ordinance, item number 1440?
Approve agreements with Peregrine Sports, LLC, and Provide Health and Services, Oregon, for the use and occupancy of a sports medical clinic at PGE Park.
Do we have somebody to present to us?
Mr. Golub, you know that once you take that seat and take the oath, we can ask you questions about anything.
I'm all yours, Nick. For the record, Mike Golub, Chief Operating Officer of the Portland Timbers and Peregrine Sports. And I'll just start by a brief introduction, if you will. This proposed deal between the city and Providence and Peregrine, we think it's an innovative one. We think it's truly a win-win-win. It will activate the neighborhood on an everyday basis, which the neighbors and neighboring businesses truly want. It brings health services to a part of the city that is arguably quite underserved. And it's the basis of an innovative partnership between Peregrine, the Timbers, and Providence, much of which has a lot of direct public benefits. So this has been in the works for many months, and we think it's in a great shape, and we think it's a really positive deal all around. Costs of building and the ongoing costs of operating the clinic are being borne completely by Providence and Peregrine. There is absolutely no cost to the city, both now and in the future. And so I'm open and welcome to any questions. And we have members of Providence here as well.
Is there anybody from Providence?
Yes.
Wishes to say anything to us? Or? So I guess I have a question, and it's probably directed more towards the city. So Dave Logsdon, you can maybe answer this too, Mike, but for you. I know we had a provision in there that Providence will, the clinic will serve people that have health insurance, including Medicare, Medicaid, and Oregon Health Plan.
Correct.
So how did we, where did we end up on that?
Dina,
where is it in the, okay.
Thanks, Commissioner Saltzman. Dina Alexander Baljanic. It did end up in the document. Commissioner Saltzman, if you look at the non-disturbance agreement, which is the shorter of the two, in Section 3, we actually pulled language directly out of the redevelopment agreement that Council previously approved for the redevelopment of the stadium. And it requires Providence during the entire term of their occupancy of the clinic facility to treat patients covered under or by the Oregon Health Plan, Medicare, or Medicaid.
Pretty straightforward.
It is.
Thank you. Anybody else have any questions?
I just comment thank you for all of you for your work and collaborating on this agreement.
Pleasure.
Okay, so this is a
and for staying here all morning and half the afternoon.
Right. Yeah, we appreciate you sticking around for this session. But so this moves on to a second reading, and it looks like a good agreement.
Thank you.
Is that it, Carla?
That's okay. All the items.
Okay, then we are adjourned until next Wednesday.
Hey, Carla, can I see you for a second?
Mute.